My name is Kyle C., and today on The Stoop, I invite actor Dennis Barham and producer Justice from Beats by Bruises as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of Mos Def's Black on Both Sides. We break down the top four songs from this classic album, plus we have a conversation about his career overall, and much, much more. Sasha Rive is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher is where you can listen to all shows from South Shore Ave. Remember to listen, rate, review, and subscribe. 5 stars, please. Thank you very much. And to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAve.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAve.com. The Ave Podcast will be up and running again later this month with our annual NBA season preview, where we break down the Eastern and Western Conference. It's so wide open, I literally have no idea what's going to happen. The Raptors are going to be raising the banner in less than 2 weeks. There's so much to talk about, but we'll get to that later, because right now it's about Black on Both Sides, all right? All right, let's get to it. It's The Stoop on South Shore Ave Radio. Don't get me. Don't get me. Welcome back to The Stoop, where we're here to discuss the underrated classic Mos Def's Black by Both Sides album. I think it's an underrated classic. I'm joined by Dennis Barham and Justice from Beats by Bruises. How you guys doing today?
Good, brother.
Yes, sir. This is your first time, man. You want me to pour you out some juice? You want some lemonade? Like, how you want to do this? You want some juice?
Yeah. Lemonade was a popular drink, and it still is.
That's... All right, so we're here to talk about, obviously, this underrated classic album. We're essentially going to be talking about our top four, our version of our top four best songs from this album. Basically, to get right into it right now. Seeing that you're the first timer, you're the rookie on this podcast, at least for all intended purposes here, I'll start off with you. What's number four for you on this album?
So are we going in order from?
Yeah, from four to one.
Four to one. Top four.
Yeah.
First of all, let me just say it was a dope album, and it was like classic material. Great time for hip hop. 1999. Crazy time for hip hop. A lot of good albums came out that year.
Really was. So, great album. Underrated, great album during that time. I always tell people, Busta Rhymes, what is it, Extinction Level Event? Yo, that album was
fire. I believe so, yeah. Definitely.
That album was fire.
A lot of good stuff came out that year. So this was definitely one of those, like, you know, the Sound Bombing Part 2 came out that year. So, yeah. Crazy year. Mm-hmm. But as a top four, Black on Both Sides, I would have to say, coming in at four, and all songs are dope, don't get me wrong, but coming in at four, I would go with Know That, featuring Talib Kweli.
Okay.
Right? Okay. Because you already heard the Black Star, so for that, it was like, I wanted to hear that back and forth, and that collaboration again, and they delivered, the beat was tight, crazy, so that'll be four for me. Will I be drop all right now?
No, we're going to do like our one on each. Yeah, Know That was dope. Honestly, I had a top three, and for me, the number four spot was really hard to choose from. Actually, it was like I must have flipped number four, like my number four like about 10 different times, and that song was one of them too. One of them too. I flipped back and forth. I thought that song was sick, and the back and forth, you know, the chorus between Talib and Mos was sick on that too.
Exactly. Yeah.
What's number four for you, Dennis?
Umisa was number four for me.
Which one?
I always call it Umisa. When I was growing up, I said, who is this guy rapping? Like, and I didn't know it was Mos Def. And the Mos Def came out with the album. I heard Speed Law. I heard God. But I didn't know this song was on his album. So I always called it Umisa instead of Umisa. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And when the song came out, I was like, this song is magical. And then Nike put it in a commercial. You know what I'm saying? It was that magical, I remember. But like, I just didn't know it was him. I didn't know he was that versatile. Like, that could, with the production and everything, you know what I'm saying? And the message he had behind it, too, was completely in contrast with the other ones I'm going to pick.
That's on my list. Like, you know, it's not number four, but it is on my list. For number four for me actually was Brooklyn.
Okay.
Like I said, like new rock and world. Sorry, rock and roll, new world water. Like I said, would have been on that fourth, and I wrote a bunch of them. But Brooklyn and me was because.
And Habitat was like that too.
Yeah, no question. But I think Brooklyn for me was because, like, the track was, first of all, it was a nod to Ice Cube's Jackin' for Beats. It was like his own Brooklyn version of Jackin' for Beats, which I appreciated. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, I think it's one of the songs that really reps his talent really well. Like, he had three different flows for three different beats, as he's giving you three different positive points of views about Brooklyn. And my favorite part of that song is the second verse, by the way. But it's but for me, it's frenetic, but it's so smooth at the same time. And just honestly, I think because of time, people really forget how super lyrical Mos Def is, or Yasin Bey.
Uh-huh. Incredibly lyrically incredible. He's incredible.
Yeah. Definitely slept on.
Yeah. And I just think because he didn't have a good body of work, and this is what I think his climax here was really getting into it. Mm-hmm. And because his body of work wasn't as like an Eminem or a Black Cloud or something like that, he gets overlooked. But he was like a real MC from jump, you know, freestyle, whatnot, and he can put it down lyrically. You know what I'm saying? So this is one of his top albums, I would say. But again, he was probably underrated because he didn't have that body of work to display his technique. You know,
Totally agree.
Yeah, and I think too, like for this song, like you get a great sense of his lyrical flow and just like the range with that track too. Like I just think. Like the way he kind of just flipped
everything.
Yeah, it was just like that one really sticks out with me. That's why I think it made four, just because of the way he changed it up. And you know, like obviously the beats change up, but just the way everything kind of changed together. Like it really resonated with me for the number four spot. But it was really hard though. It was really hard for me to choose that fourth spot.
In regards, you always want to leave something off. Like, oh, I should have used that one. But
yeah,
there were some dope tracks.
This could have been split to two albums with really good tracks, like from 5 to 6, 7, maybe. You know, but this album was really tight, man. Very versatile.
But that's why top four is. That's what makes it hard, right? You're definitely gonna leave something off this. Like, absolutely, you're definitely gonna leave something off the list.
Oh, it's, for sure.
Something's not gonna make it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So number three, who do you got for number three, Jess?
I got hip hop. Because most Diamond D on the beat. To me, that's one of those tracks where you really got to see Mos's skill. Like, this is hip hop. You call it hip hop, and he delivers just straight hip hop. The beat was crazy. The vibes are dope. I just like, all right, Mos. I saw you with Talib. I see what's going on, but at that point, it was like, all right, you're a force now. You're a force. So that's like the second song on the album. So it went hard, man. It went hard.
So Dennis, who's your number three?
My number three is Got. This is how you get Got. Mm-hmm. The production was like so mint on that, and he just rode the beat so nice. You know what I'm saying? And he explained such a nice story. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. About Brooklyn and whatnot. But that one there, right there, is like, yeah, I love that song. For three, anyways. You know, I got two more coming up, but Got did it for me, lyrically tight.
Okay.
Don't get me.
That's what it is. I'm laughing because it brought back so much memories. Yeah.
I used to play that song all the time.
Oh, you see what I'm saying? Yeah, I rewind that song. Like it was like, yeah, it's a rewind that song. Yeah. I suck.
Yeah, I forgot about that song. Actually, damn it, I was on the redo my list. That song was tight. That song was real tight. But yeah, so number three for me actually, number three for me was Mathematics.
Okay.
Number three for me was Mathematics because I think it was one of the most lyrically dense songs that was on the entire album, when he was basically just spitting out statistics and scenarios about Black people, himself and his career, cell phones, and he had so many topics, and he's trying to do the math and make sense of it all, and asking us to basically do the math on it too. Like, like part of the charm on this record is that like he educates and he entertains, but he still makes it hip hop and he keeps and he keeps you interested. Like especially the way he starts off each verse counting up to 10. It's kind of, you know what it's kind of like? It's kind of like reminiscent of like something Big or Nas would do. You know what they make? They always had like a song on like one song on the album that was like really super creative, like a 10-track commandments or I Gave You Power. Like to me, that was it was this kind of formula. And coincidence or not, I don't know if you want to call it coincidence or not, mentioning those two rappers, you know, like a Hov and those guys, you know, he had DJ Premier make this beat for him too.
And
that kind of like that kind of really brings it home. Like it's funny because I heard Primo tell the story about not only is this one of his favorite beats, but he said that Scarface, I forgot which album Scarface was working on, and he was begging Primo for this beat, and he was like basically like, yo, if Mos Def doesn't come, like I'm taking this from you, you know. And they said Mos Def just laid it down, you know, like so even he was like, fuck, like yo, you killed that. But he's like, yeah, I really wanted that beat. To me, that's actually one of like the more underrated beats that he produced, to be honest with you. Especially the way he cuts and scratch the chorus in. Like,
it's, oh, come on. Yeah. You know what I mean? Always, bro. So, yeah, and that song was always good for that. Exactly, right?
You know what I mean? It was like 16 or 17 on the album. Like, man,
the end, and it's so tight.
Yeah, no, that song to me is like, it's sick. I remember because back then, you know, you're doing different research and stuff. So some of the stuff he was even talking about, I was like, oh my gosh, like how was he doing this and making this hot? Like, yo, this is crazy. You know, like Mathematics to me will always be in my top three for when I think of this album. Like to me, it was just nuts. Even when I listen to it now, like it still hits the same way to me. Like it's crazy. Mm-hmm. At number two, I'll flip it a little bit. I'll start with you, Dennis. Who's number? What's your number two track off this album?
The number two for me is Speed Law.
Speed Law. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Speed Law. For some reason, you know, it's lyrically tight, whatnot, but he mixes it up like so perfectly, and it's a higher tempo beat. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. BPM's a little higher, so he's spitting a little faster. You know what I'm saying? So if people haven't heard the album in a while, I encourage you to go listen to the album. It's 20th anniversary. There's been no better time to do it. But that's what it was. From beginning to end, it was tight. You know, well produced.
Yeah, Speed Law is well produced. Speed Law is dope. Speed Law is dope. I can't even front on that. What's number two for you, Jess?
I'm going to go with Miss Fat Booty. song was dope. It brought back storytelling. I wouldn't say it brought back, but at that time, you know, going into the millennium, you know, hip hop was changing. So it was like refreshing to hear a story. And the beat was dope. The sample was ill. The change ups are crazy. That as a producer, I just love those change ups. So
yeah, you're looking at the producer's lens. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So that song was dope to me. And again, that's like, I won't say that's what he's known for. Mos Def has a crazy catalog, but that song to me was like, okay. You can do it all, bro. You can do it all, man. You know what I mean? You can tell a story. You got skills. You can go back and forth with Talib. You're political. Like, damn, what can't you do? You know? So, that's number two.
Yeah.
I'm going to just add to what you're saying here. I never produced a record in my life. I don't know anything about that. But I have a deep appreciation for production and beats, especially with hip-hop. I don't know if you feel like this, but for me, I'm actually jealous of this beat. Like, I kind of wish I made the beat, even though I'm not a producer. Like, just straight up, because I'll give you guys a quick story. Actually, I'll never forget where I was when this song came out, and I'll just let the record be known. This is actually my number two as well. So basically, I heard the world premiere of this record when I was in New York. It was 99, Labor Day weekend. I was getting ready to go to a fete because it was, you know, New York Carnival. So I was getting ready to go to this big soca fete. I'm getting dressed. I got Hot 97 on. I got my tape recording because every time I go to New York during those days, I always had to walk with a blank 90-minute Maxwell tape to have, you know, recording everything from 97 during them days. That was like mandatory. That was more important to me back then than shopping, to be honest with you. Like, I had to have that. And so I still remember they were like, yo, world premiere, Mos Def, you know, this is the first single off the new album, da 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 da. And yo, when this song dropped, I swear to God, I stopped everything I was doing. Like, it made me stop in my tracks. Like, I literally just stopped everything I was doing, and I was like, yo, what the hell is this? What the hell is this? They rewinded it. Like, I don't know if it was Funk Flex. It was one of them. One of their shows. I think it might have been Funk Flex. And they played it back 2-3 times. And I was getting mad because as much as I like the DJing part aspect of it, I'm like, yo, I actually wanted to hear the lyrics. Right?
So,
So when you're hearing the story going back and forth, you're like, yo, like, this... Honestly, at that time, I thought it was one of the greatest records I heard at that period of time.
Yeah, the anticipation of this wasn't as the end result of this album wasn't anticipated. So when it came out, it was like, okay, I was anticipating hearing an album, but not to this level. You know what I'm saying? So it was just breathtaking, like from the beginning to end. Like, you know, but I'm like. Anyways, go ahead with yours, because I want to tell you my opinion.
Oh, no, that's all. That's all good. We're sharing opinions here on it. But, honestly, for me, it's something you said just before where you're talking about, like, you know, he's coming off from Black Star, and the anticipation for what he was going to drop there was a buzz there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
There was a big buzz there at that time because, like, yo, Black Star was a classic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For both of them. And you know what I mean? So even for me, I got introduced, like, I knew most before because mid-90s, he was kind of bubbling with Tribe a little bit. And, you know, like, what's the Butter Babies?
Yeah, he's pretty good there and there.
Guys here and there. Yeah, so you hear him
Bush pop up
stuff. Yeah, Bush Babies. Bush Babies.
Yeah, New York. Yeah,
so you hear him pop up in little things, De La Soul. Like, you pop up here and there and stuff. Mm-hmm. But Black Star was the first real introduction, you know what I'm saying, to them. So I thought they were a group. So then hearing the story afterwards where they were just two solo artists that just came together for a project. But I mean, they did it so. Reason why I call that album a classic too is because they did that album so well. Like, you made it. They made it seem like they were a group.
Exactly. The continuity was so tight.
It's incredible.
Like, you're like EPMD. Like, you're a group. You know?
That's exactly it. And the back and forth lyrics, they just fed off of each other. You know, it didn't dominate each other or one wasn't oppressed. It was at the same high intense level, you know, and it's like nice and smooth, the EPMD.
Exactly.
When groups break up, you anticipate one being better than the other or one being better.
Yeah.
But they both did well, you know what I'm saying? And it just shows the impact, like Outkast. They're both equally good, and it just, you know, elevates the album or production that you're on, you know?
Yeah, because, you know, today, like, there's so many collaboration mixtapes and collaboration
stuff. Yeah.
But it's like, even if you I'm not even knocking it, but like, even if you enjoy those projects, you know, it's two solo artists together for a project. They don't feel like a group. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the fact that these guys came together and did it like a group, like, it was just nuts. Sorry, go what are you gonna say, Jess?
So I was gonna just interject and be like, are there even groups nowadays?
I know it too.
No, you're right.
All the money.
No, you're right.
Give me those awards, you know, would get me the quickest.
No, but you're right. You're right, though. You're right.
Hot right now.
You're right, though, because the way the money game is now in music, I don't know if it makes sense to be a 3 or 4 man group or that kind of thing. Not the same way, anyway. Like, it's a little different. But like, you stole some of my points with this, so I you know, I feel like you're cheating off my paper. Just for this fat booty.
Well, it's a classic album. It's a classic album.
Yeah, no,
there's gonna be some overlap.
No, of course, no
overlap.
One of the underrated moments for this song to me, actually, what I think is an underrated genius moment for me, was not using a chorus. I think, like, talking through the chorus, like, the way he's talking through the chorus kind of makes you feel like he's going through his feelings about this chick. And the way he's doing it, it sounds like a conversation. Like, he's making you feel like you're sitting beside him on the stoop, and he's telling you this. Like the way you listen to that song, the way, especially after the first verse, and the way he kind of breaks it down, he's like, oh my God, this girl's in my head. He's like, oh, she got me so messed up. It's like, you're like, yo, this dude's really tripping. Like, this dude's really tripping right now. And to me, it kind of adds to the song because it highlights it highlights that part of it, and it highlights the beat at the same time, because that beat, like I said again, was so great. When it changes up, like, you catch that now because it's not being hidden by the chorus. It's hidden by, like, because it's with the conversation. So it kind of, like, in the weird way, it kind of elevates each other. You know what I mean? If that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And when you rock with a sample like that, You know, like, it just speaks for itself regardless. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's part of the instrumentation, that's part of the genius of music, is that when you blend elements properly together, it just works. I don't need to say things anymore because the beat's going to say what it needs to be said, right? And then mm-hmm. we can carry that vibe. So, yeah, that song was dope.
Yeah, it's gonna speak for you. You're right. But mm-hmm. I thought that was a genius moment. I don't know if he thought about that or somebody brought that to him, but the fact that not doing a chorus, like, honestly, that it kind of elevates the song. Like, to me, I think that's what for me, it takes the song to a next level. It's not like you're catching all the sample, you're catching everything now. And like I said, he makes it sound like a freaking conversation. Like, he actually makes it feel like mm-hmm. it's one of your boys talking about some chick that he's tripping on. You're like, yo, what's wrong with Dennis, man? Why is Dennis tripping on this chick like this? Yo, I got this, man. She must be real good. She must look bad as hell. Like, the way she, the way he's tripping like this. So it's that to me, it makes the song so relatable too. You know what I mean? But yeah, number
two.
It's a bit ass so fat you can see it from the front.
Yeah.
But you hit all the points, just honestly. Like, the storytelling aspect of it is, like, that's a great mark of a storyteller. Like, they can paint the picture so vivid that you see it so clearly in your head. You know,
like, I would say, like, they use all these words, and, like, those words I say all the time. It's so simple, and they made it such, like, so poetically. Like Slick Rick, it's so poetic, and,
exactly,
and it tells such a loving story. And even with the video, I saw the video, I'm like, yo, this guy's just chill. He's really just telling a story with his friends. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Nah, so this song is like, and it's funny because my number one, well, I'll get to that in a moment, but like, about, I would say up until about 5 or 6 years ago, this song would have never been lower than number one. Never. Like, this mm-hmm. song was always number one to me. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. you know, okay, as time goes along, you know how it is, man. Sometimes your tastes change a little bit. You know what I mean? It's like,
it's like
back in the day, you know, we go to the club, like way back, like, or especially around these times, Ryerson days and stuff. It's like, you go to the club, there was no question I was having at least 2 Mike Hard lemonades. I can't drink that now.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? I didn't even know they even sold those videos. I totally bypassed that when I made LCBO. I'm like, nah.
Oh, I can't look at that no more. But when I was, you know, around this age, like 20, 21.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, I'm swinging about 2 or 3 of these back. No problem. No problem. You know?
So give me your number.
Now it's all different. Now it's completely different. Exactly. Completely different. All right.
Things
so,
don't change like Big said.
What? Exactly. So number one, I'll start with you, Dennis. What's your number one track for this album? Number one song off this album?
Like, it's so hard because you say the same thing for all the songs, but it's just which one, I guess, moves you at the time, because there's so many good ones. But for me, it's Habitat. And I don't know, a lot of people, it's not a very popular song, it didn't go on airwaves, but it was just funky to me. It was smooth, it was like production, everything like that. You know, it wasn't one of the popular songs, but man, it was so good, you know?
Fast tempo too.
Yeah.
And this is why I love debating hip hop with, like, intelligent minds.
Yeah. It's true. It's so tough to pick, but yeah, you learn so much.
Your favorite may not be my favorite, but I can respect it and be like, oh.
Yeah, it's true. It's like, man, when did I think of that? Even though it's on the album, we're just looking at it, you know what I'm saying? It's like open book test. When did we think of that? Like,
it's funny. I would have never thought about Habitat as a number one either, but it works, though. I agree with you.
But again, and that's how music, you know, music is a vibe, and depending on how it catches you.
That's what I'm saying, song, depending on how it moves you, where you're doing, and what, you know, where you are in life.
Resonates with me differently than it might resonate, you know, today, or like you said, today or tomorrow, it might change, but
mm-hmm.
the impact of that song, where I was at the time, whoo, you know, it means a lot, so.
And longevity, the songs that I've hated in the past, just in general, I hate that song. But over time, like, man, it brings back so many memories of Tears and Dances. I love this song.
It's so true. And that's why I like kind of doing these at least with some of these throwback like 20th anniversary kind of albums where we trying to do like your top four, your top fives. I kind of like it because sometimes I like to hear what other people's like top five is or top four is in this case, because I know it's gonna be different from mine. And like, you know, sometimes you want to like go back and forth with it, but it makes sense, right? Like every like this album was so good, like your top four is gonna be completely different from one another. You know, because exactly. Each of the songs, like they were so different. You know what I mean? But it all blended together.
And that's a testament to a real good artist. That if three people can come up with almost four different top fours, I mean, you're dope.
Yeah, and good reasonable explanations too. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like one of the songs that nobody liked universally. You know what I'm saying? Like why would you pick that?
And you know what adds to it though too? Like Miss Fat Booty is obviously the most popular song that he's made, but it wasn't like, you know, some albums there's gonna be a song where it's like it just dominated airwaves for years, so it's like you're almost conditioned to think like, okay, well it's gonna be still Dre if it's a Dr. Dre album. It's still gonna be you know, like Big Pimpin' if it's Jay-Z, you know what I mean? Like if you're talking about a specific album, because there's so much memories, the song was so huge, you know what I mean? Like it just that's what you're kind of gonna float to when you're making these kind of lists. But because it's funny, it's not even a knock on him. I think because the album was so well rounded, I think, like, even though Miss Fat Booty was the most popular song, because it wasn't like on that huge level, you kind of get a chance to choose, you know what I mean? Even though it's the most popular one, you still get a chance to, like, you know, like some songs are still going to hit with you a little differently, you know what I mean? Which is kind of what I like about this, actually.
Exactly.
So what's your number one?
My number one is Mathematics.
Okay.
For many of the reasons you mentioned earlier, but also because at this time I was a humongous DJ Premier fan. For me, it was like a rite of passage for every hip hopper, that if you don't have a primo beat,
oh my gosh,
ooh, you know what I mean?
Or if you don't even know who he is, what?
But that was like a rite of passage for MC to me. It's like, when I hear you on a primo, now you're solidified. You know, because Jay got him on his first album, Nas got him on his first album. So when I heard, you know, when I heard most on this, I was like, oh, okay, you've been stamped, you've been certified. You are New York, you are hip hop, and he did it up. Like, for all the same reasons why you said before, it's like he broke down the plight and the things of the black culture. He broke down Mathematics on a lot of things, and he just summed up everything to me. Like that's like New York to me. So it's like, that's my number one.
Man, you know what? I 5,000% agree with you, because I was a DJ Premier addict back in the days. I think in some ways I still am a little bit. You know what I mean? But back in those days, especially when he was when he was like in his prime. Oh my! Like I was at the point where it's like, I can tell you, it was like, without you telling me, I can hear the song and be like, that's Primo. Primo made it.
Yep.
I can, you know, like, yeah. Like, you were at that point, like, you know, and I know I wasn't the only one that was like that, but I know I was like, I can hear it and be like, yep, that was Primo. And you're absolutely right. Like you touch on a great point. I totally forgot about that, where your album wasn't official unless Primo was on it.
Remember when,
especially coming from the East.
Yeah, exactly. Remember when CNN got the first Primo? Like, Nori was like the happiest. Oh,
yeah.
I finally got a Primo.
It's true. And the fact that Primo could go with, like, in those days, like a CNN, that's kind of a edgy, more hard, you know, hardcore hip hop. And he can go to like a Mos Def and you could still hear his beat, you know, and his imprint on it. And it could be so diverse in hip hop and the style and the group, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Because to me, it's like the best thing about Primo, most of his beats, especially back in those days, I found that most artists, to me at least, and maybe because I was a Primo homer, that I loved everything he did, but I found that most dudes, the flow was the best when they're on a Primo. It was something about those drums. It was something about the openness of the track, even though it's busy and the scratches and things are going on. It just you just seemed like it was a perfect marriage every time.
Yeah.
On a Primo. Like when I heard Jay on a Primo, I'm like, damn, bro.
I know.
You need like five more of these joints, yo.
You need a whole album of them, for real. And he, and
yeah, he, I'm still waiting for the Nas and Primo album.
I know. I know. And you know what's funny too? Like, as you're saying that, the it was like most of his cuts, because he was a DJ, and I learned this from my brother, but like it was DJ friendly. A lot of his beats were DJ friendly. He always set it up in a way where you can cut and scratch right before the verse started. Like he always, if you listen to all his songs, there was always like a boom bap, like a kick in the snare that would come in right before the artist would start rapping. So it was like it gives you a chance to like cut it up. Like it was just like, yo, he was nasty, man. Like Primo was just Primo was disgusting. But you're right though. Like it's in the East Coast, like back in those days, especially when Primo was on top, like you were not official. And it's, you know what's funny? Last year, so Drake comes out with the Scorpion album, right? Yo, I can't lie. Maybe this is the old school of me, but one of the hottest tracks on that album to me
is the Primo track.
Is Sandra's Rose. Sandra's Rose. Dude, that song is sick. That song is sick. That beat. I mean, Drake.
I didn't know he produced that song. I had no idea. I'm sitting here laughing. I was gonna pretend. I'm like, no, I'm gonna be real. I didn't know. It was so good. That's a nice song. It was one of the songs that I'm not the whole go out and buy the whole Drake album, not like that. Mm-hmm. But he does have some nice tracks, and that was one of the tracks I do like. Yeah. You know, but not knowing it was Primo.
But that was the one that hit for me too. I was like, once I heard that, I was just like, yo, I had that. I remember I was going to a wedding, one of my buddy's wedding in Cali last year, and on the highway, driving on the highway, I had that on loop, like just back and back and over and over again. That, because I love the production of that. I'm like, yo, just when you think like, yo, Primo's a little older, da 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 da, he hits you with that, and you're just like,
yeah,
yo, this guy still has it in the bag, man.
I guess when you're a DJ on that level and you've been around music for that long. It's like riding a bike for him. Like,
He's never gonna like your complete muscle memory, you know, brain memory,
exactly.
Yeah, and you're right, because it's the same thing. So it's like that one they did the Gangstar record they just put out with J. Cole on it. It's like,
you're like
J. Cole kills that. J. Cole sounds debatable if he's ever sounded better. Honestly, like that his verse, I'm like, yo, he killed that. He kills that, you know. But you're right. Primo brings that out of you. If you're a hip hop guy, like even, and it's nice to see like the younger generation still have that respect, where it's like, you know what, like even though you're not using him for every album, yo, you can't have a whole career and not have a Primo track. That doesn't even feel right. You know what I mean? So it's like, I like that. I still like that. I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
My number one is Umi Says.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could do that. Yeah.
My number one is Umi Says, and again, it speaks to what I was saying earlier about like how your taste changed. Like, don't get me wrong, I always loved this record from day one. Mm-hmm. I always loved this record, but this record wouldn't have been above Miss Fat Booty up until like a few years ago. But you get a little older, your life changes a little bit, your taste changes a little bit. I think it speaks to his talent for starters, because. Yeah, you wouldn't classify him as a singer, but you'd classify him as an artist because he makes it work, even though he's not a singer. It's a great record. To me, the production is flawless. It's something that's like Roy Ayers or Gil Scott Heron would have, like, you know what I mean, been on, or that type of vibe. Like, the production to me is just always been flawless, because it kind of takes you to a different place. Like, it puts you in a great mood, or it can relax you, it can chill you out. And like I said, because of where I am now in my life, listening to this song now means more because of the message in the record, you know, where he's saying like, I ain't no perfect man, but I'm trying to do the best that I can with what it is I have. I think it's funny with the three of us on this podcast right now. I think just thinking of it now, like it kind of relates to us in that, because we're in three different genres that we're in, or we're diving into some cases, but the three of us can relate. The concept of his goal for it. You know, shining your light, giving your gift to the world, you know, trying to inspire others, creating, you know what I mean? Making the best work possible with the talents is what you have. Like, to me, that's the essence of this song. So every time I hear it now, like, it's, like I said, I always understood that message from, like I said, even 20 years ago when this album came out, but like, it just hits different now for me. You know what I mean?
Definitely, 100%.
Yeah,
it just... I remember I talked to a friend of mine recently, and he was talking about, and this is no knock to anyone, but he was like, being a grown man now, he's like, I'm almost embarrassed listening to like Mobb Deep again, you know, because I'm so grown now that I totally don't relate to that anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I hear you. That's part of growth, that, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
she was will forever be embedded in my mind, but I'll be like, I get it. You know what I mean? Like, I may not want to listen to that. You know, it may not resonate the same way.
I think it's more when you do listen to song, and like again, it brings up memories, it triggers memories. I remember when we used to dress like that and act like that, and so on and so on, right? Because for me with music, I just remember time periods. Like, even if it's, you know, Beastie Boys and Run DMC, well, I'm not going to wear shoes and no laces. But I remember the time I used to do that all the time. It was cool, you know what I'm saying? And it brings back a lot of memories of that. So
I always say, like, now when I play that song, sometimes I play it when I need to clear my head, if I need a positive vibe or to be relaxed. But, like, say if I'm going to a meeting, sometimes, yeah, it's funny. Sometimes I'll still run Mobb Deep, depending on my mood, just to get me amped up. But sometimes, like, I need that positive vibe just to be relaxed. But, like, it still makes me feel incredibly confident. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just because of the message. Like, it's not... I wouldn't say this is like my theme music or anything like that, but if I had a superhero
playlist, I know what you mean.
If I had a superhero playlist, like, this would be on it. Yeah, this song is crazy. Like, I love the record. And the video's chill. Like, it's, yeah, this.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, this album, this song was, like, the this drum, song right now is my number one. Maybe it might change. Maybe it might change in a couple of years, but right now, as of this podcast, like, because of where I am in my life, you know, and like, I got kids now, so it's like, you know, like, you're trying to spread that message every day for them to go for theirs and be great. It's like, yo, like the song is number one. Like, it just hits different for me now. You know, it means a little more. So I think that's probably why it is number one for me. But yeah, like I said, I can't knock either of you guys' list because, again, like I said, like, you know, as we were saying throughout this pod, it's like, that there's so much good songs from this album, the list is going to be a little different, and it's going to be acceptable. I honestly, like, that's how good this album is. So I guess the one question I want to ask is, what are your takeaways from the rest of this album?
From the what?
Wait, go ahead. Sorry, get
you want me to Calvin. You want me to repeat the question?
Repeat the question, please. Thank you.
Yes. I know.
What's your takeaway from the rest of the album? Like, this album overall, or the rest of this album, even though we had our list, but like what is your takeaway from everything?
My takeaway is, I wish he made more albums. I wish he was out there more relevant with his music. I think we missed out on a lot, you know? I know he's going through stuff. It just shows that, man, what do you have to offer if he kept going, you know, sort of thing. If he was passionate, was distracted, didn't leave the country, didn't have to deal with social media and all these other distractions. But, man, it would have been nice for him to get another album out, you know, because it was just incredible, the album, back and forth, and hearing it on the airwaves all the time. And wasn't a real, you know, black song per se, wasn't really popularized being on TV, but Nike picked it up, and that was a big moment for me. Like, wow,
Jordan, he's a hip-hop artist, right?
And it was more of an African, Jordan commercial, and it's a more African-based song. Like, wow, this guy is, like, amazing. Like, yeah, so that's it for me.
100%. Like, most was obviously extremely talented actor, artist, and not just a rapper, like, you know, like, singing, the rock band, like, just a talent, you know. So I can see why some of these people who are extremely talented as him, the Lauryn Hills, the people like that, you selfishly want more from them,
because that's like, what it is, man.
You know,
like, get it together, get off the track and run.
But they have so much to give, so it's like, it's ironic that you called me for this podcast, because the last time I even performed live, I opened up for Mos Def. Or at that time, he was Yasin Bey at that point.
Yeah. Or he is.
Really? I had no idea. Yeah. You know, that's big.
He came out in like a white robe, barefooted. Gave out like three dozen roses to all the females that were there. Like, he was just like on some next step. You know, like,
holy
artistry. I wouldn't do that. You know what I mean?
You're going deep.
That just shows you, like, this guy is so dope.
that he could come out here and do this, because I'm just, I'm an artist. Like, no matter what I do, my vibe is what's bringing people together. My vibe is what you're catching, right? So, rest of the album, it was a great album. I think it definitely, for the year that it came out, 99, definitely probably was slept on. But as a body of work, top to bottom, I think it was, like, completely solid. Yeah. One of the best albums that year. Because, again, remember that year, Nas came out that year with I Am.
Yep.
Jay had Volume 3. There's a lot of big things going on. He said,
yeah.
Dr. Dre had the Chronic 2001.
That was a busy time in hip-hop, man. Very busy year.
But he did his thing, so definitely one of the...
And we're still talking about it, you know what I'm saying? Exactly. Like, Heavy is still being played, he's still relevant, and he's not even been out in terms of his body of work, you know what I mean?
Sorry, I got to touch on something Just was saying, though. Like, what's funny is it's weird with that era, like that late 90s, early 2000s era, where the greatness of certain artists, as you're saying, they're so great, it's almost like it's... Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, Mos Def did put out other albums since this one. You know what I mean? Even though this was his last one, he put out other stuff. Like, he wasn't like a Lauryn Hill where he disappeared. But, like, there's something about these great talents where they disappear for a stretch of time. Like, you know, you said Lauryn Hill disappeared for years, a long stretch of time. Dave Chappelle disappeared for a long stretch of time when he was really hitting. D'Angelo, same thing. You know, he was really hitting, took 15 years off. You know what I mean? And it's funny, I watched a documentary with him about 2 weeks ago. Really good. I don't know if it's coming out in theaters or what have you, but there's a documentary with him about the voodoo and, you know, going into the Black Messiah. But I was just really tight. But like, yeah, it's just a weird, like, Chris Tucker was another one, too, actor-wise, where it's like, yo, after Rush Hour 2, he just disappeared for a long period of time. So I don't know what it is, what like great talent or great artistry creatives where they just it's almost like the conventional or the business maybe screws with them and they just step away.
I'm sure that definitely has it part to do with it, and I think also the other side would just probably be that when you're that gifted, there's obviously other things that you're gifted at or things that you're equally passionate at, so it's like, this doesn't define me. So even though I'm dope and you want me to rap, but guess what, I want to act, because I think I'm an actor as well. Like, so when you're that talented overall, you know there's other things that's on their mind that I could do this as well. If I'm great at this, I could be great at that. And they just pursue other things. And it's like
you said earlier, right.
We're selfish about, I want to hear more from you. But again, if you want more, then watch my movies too. I, you know, support everything I do, but...
Because he acted with Bill Cosby first in that detective show. I forget the name of it. So,
was it a Cosby Mysteries or something?
Something like that. And so he's probably an actor first in terms of artistry. Yeah, you know, and then started doing music and writing and expanded from that. And then, behold, is the music.
And do you guys remember when Jay retired? When Jay retired, there was a point where Mos was like killing a lot of freestyles. A lot of
online.
I was like, okay, Mos Def is taking the title. Jay's gone. Now Mos is going to hold the title. Like, there was a time, and then he was just like, yeah, but I'm an actor too. Like, I'm going to jump in this movie with Robert De Niro.
I mean, you know? I'll be back.
I'm going to do the Italian job. I'm going to go act with Charlize Theron these people. You're right. Because as you say that, it reminds me of the Chappelle show, the freestyle when he was rapping in the car. Remember that episode? I don't know what episode. It was probably the first season, but he was freestyling in the passenger seat, and Dave Chappelle was driving in the car, and he kicked a crazy freestyle where you're just like, yo, what the hell is this? And even Chappelle's driving, and Chappelle's like looking at him like, yo, what the fuck is going on here? You know, but you're right. Like, you're making me think of that. You're right. You're absolutely right. Not to cut you off, but you're right.
No, not at all, man. Like, that's all I was saying. It's like, there was a time where I felt like, all right, the torch is going to be passed right now. Jay, you can retire comfortably, and Mos is going to carry this because he is that dope. You know what I mean? And plus, he has so much content, right?
Yeah.
Like, if Hope's biggest criticism is he doesn't get deep until 444,
right.
Mos didn't have that problem. Like, I can do it any way you want. I can do it. And he showed that the skill, thought, creativeness, like, he had it all. So,
was like, yeah. Hey.
But then he went through some label drama and stuff too, right? So around that time, so it got a little weird after that point. It got a little weird. Not from him, but like it just the career part of it got a little weird music wise. You're right. But like there was a point in time where it's like, yeah, he was killing everything. He was killing everything. I know for me, one of my takeaways is, first of all, I miss Rockers Records. I really miss Rockers Records, man. and for those people who don't know, they were the backpacking underground hip hop label that for about, I would say, about a three to five year period, they're just putting out fire. As you said earlier, the Sound Bombing album, the Lyricist Lounge 1 and 2.
Just dopeness, though.
Yeah, just the Black Star album, this album, Pharaoh Monch's Internal Affairs. People forget about that one. That album was crazy.
Yeah.
That
Simon Company says on Flow.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Reflection Eternal that came out around like maybe about a year or so after.
Oh, I remember that.
Reflection Eternal was dumb. Reflection Eternal was dumb. But like they were putting out classics during that period in time. And I mean they weren't like Def Jam, they weren't Interscope, but like those guys themselves, you know what I mean? By being themselves and putting out quality work. So for me it's like when I think of this, I'm just like, man, I miss those days, man, where rockers just putting out shit. You know?
Yeah, okay.
And then I think overall it makes me appreciate most just for a lot of the reasons you guys are mentioning. He's so underrated.
Like there's not anybody similar to him at the time and even now in his style and his delivery and whatnot. And that's why people are still talking about it. He's so relevant because he's just so unique in his style, you know, in his presence.
And it's funny. It's something that me and Ry discussed a little bit when I think you got disconnected earlier. But you remember, Jess, you're bringing up this point where we're talking about how, you know, guys like big talents like him, like Talib, like Black Thought, like Pharaoh Monch, like those guys are monsters because really and truly, it doesn't matter how long they stay away. When they're ready to go, it's like
they go.
They go. And you still and they put up EP, now you're still like, yeah, I gotta check it out. I wanna hear what he's gotta say. Like and you know what kind of reminds you of that? When Black Thought last year hopped on that Funkmaster Flex freestyle.
Exactly.
Right?
Oh, he went on for 10 minutes.
Oh my gosh. Didn't stop.
Made everyone have to rap again. It's like, okay, all this mumble stuff, and it's cool.
You know, I'm
not the old guy with get off my lawn guy.
Right.
If this is rap, you have to be able to rap, right?
So
Black Thought reminded people, like, listen, have some bars with you. And, woo.
Yeah,
and you can take any 2 minutes of that song and make it into like a legit song. Any two minutes of that 10 minute segment there.
And you know the joke is too, like people, I remember so many people were shocked at how good that was. But if you really were a fan of the Roots, if you're really a fan of hip hop, you weren't surprised by that.
From jump, he's freestyle master from jump. Yeah.
If you went to any of his concerts during their prime, the Roots prime, like, yo, that guy would rap your face off for 2 straight hours. Wouldn't stop. No breaks. He would just go in the whole time. Freestyles, anything. Like he was a master. So seeing him have that moment, I kinda hope at some point in time Most has that moment. Because I think Most is a talent like that too. Can you imagine him going on something like that and just ripping new beats? Like, jeez.
That means right now we gotta at Funk Flex call Most, Mighty Most Def, Yatsen, they call him. Call him up to the station. Yo, like on the real, like I have a quote right here on my phone. Like, look at this. It's the Black Side and from that same Funk Flex. I had to write it down because like this is dopeness. He's like, I'm a walking affirmation that if imagination and focus and patience gets you closer to your aspirations. Like, he was just so dope and intelligent. You know what I mean? Like, and again, I don't think he gets his credit. And Black Thought would probably eat up Most things.
Yeah, and he would. But like I said, I want that moment for Most because Most was it's funny. You know, as preparing for this, I listened to that freestyle yesterday, actually, Black Thought. Don't ask me why, but I just, you know, when you're going down the YouTube rabbit hole and it pops up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I got 10 minutes to listen to this. I got
Can let that play.
I'll make 10 minutes for that one.
Yeah, I got some free time. But there was the Cypher freestyle with him and Black Dot and I think Eminem. And I know some people Eminem was the one that murdered it. But I honestly, the way Mo starts that off is so smooth. Like it sounds like it's so effortless. It was so effortless how he did that, man. Like he kills that. Like him and Black Dot, all three of them like kill it. But if you ever see you can probably Google it, like, or YouTube it.
You can watch it and see.
But if you ever watch that, just the way Most just starts it off, you're just like, fuck, like the gift is so easy for him. It's like breathing.
Uh-huh.
It's so simple for him. So that's why I'm like, I kind of wish he kind of has that moment, because guys like that, like even Pharrell Monch, like when Pharrell Monch pops up here and there, you're like, yo, this guy still has it, man. Like he still has it. You know what I mean? But it's like, yeah, they don't put out albums anymore. But it's like if they hop up on your single, your freestyle, you're like, damn, man.
Like, yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, I forgot. Yeah.
But one of the last points I want to make is like, you know, it didn't quite occur to me like back then like it does now. But, you know, how old was Mos Def back then? Like in his 20s when he made that album, right?
Yeah.
This was a grown man album in terms of the content, the intellect, the topics being discussed. Like he
through the wisdom behind it. Yeah,
the wisdom. Like, yo, he may have been like we all know he's talented, but like, yo, this like from this album alone, if you didn't catch it from his previous work, he's really intelligent, man. You know what I mean? Like the songs he did that were socio-political, he did songs about water, the environment. You know, like they said, the speed law. Where he's talking about both the literal and figurative sense, and you know, and just he had a sense of where the culture was going. Like looking at it now, like how the culture is, like, you know, they're professing to go green and preserving green space and everything else. Like he kind of looks like Nostradamus right now when he listens to some of the songs from this album. Like to me, it was like he was really highly intelligent. You know what I mean?
They opened a black bookstore in Brooklyn there.
Yeah.
Believe, right? So, they're well ahead of their time. Like intellectual books. Like they wanted to bring the book into the community.
Yeah.
So they specifically went and got the book.
Yeah, and I think they still have it too. I think the bookstore still around. But so that's to tell you like what, like these guys aren't just, you know, these guys aren't just like just filling space. You know what I mean? Like, they got meaning.
They have something to say.
They really have something to say. They got real meaning to them. And the last thing I want to say too is, man, I don't know if you guys know, but there's he's doing a concert in Brooklyn on November the 3rd. He's basically redoing this whole album.
Oh, word.
He's redoing it. And trust me, when I about a few weeks ago, when I saw this, I saw the ad for it. I saw it somewhere. Dude, I remember looking at that, and I remember saying to myself, like, I mean, I just got married. You know what I mean? So, you know, you kind of want that chill vibe. Yo, I went online and started looking for flights. Because that album, I used to kill that album so much. I was like, I can't imagine seeing him perform this album in Brooklyn. This whole album in Brooklyn. I'm like, yo, I gotta be there. But then I found out one of my boys told me it was already completely sold out anyway, so I had no chance. But trust me, I that's not something I would normally do, but I really thought about it. I was like, yo, Mos Def was redoing this entire album in Brooklyn. I'm like, no, man, I gotta see this.
Yeah, that would have been dope.
You know, and I'm still secretly like hoping like a couple of tickets pop up or something. I don't think I still will go.
SeatGeek.com,
you know. but that album to me, like, that's how much it hits to me, man. Like it's an underrated classic. Like we always talk about, like, you know, the Illmatics and the Reasonable Doubts and, you know, like the Outkast albums and, you know, like the new, even the New School and all that stuff now from the Kendricks, and we talk about all these albums, but this album gets missed. But it to me, it's like, it's you definitely put that in the classic category, you know, 100%. On that note, fellas, listen, man, thank you for coming on the stoop today, man. It's been a great pleasure.
Yeah, no problem.
You know, and first time guest, sir. Yes, thank you, Just.
No problem.
My pleasure. All I was missing was the 40 app on the stoop, and it'll be good.
Sorry, what's that?
Well, I said all we were missing was the 40 app, but I still.
40X crew, that's right, yeah.
We'll save that for the next time. We'll save the oldie for the next time. But before
I was
we go,
Saint Ives goo.
Was that?
I used to drink Saint Ives, not oldie. It's all good.
Yes. But before we go, though, like, you know, I want to give you guys a space to plug whatever you guys have going on. I know that is every time I say this when you're on the podcast.
I know,
like,
man. You put me on the spot. I have nothing to say.
Nothing to say. But then I see you on commercials, man. And I see, what was the last commercial you were out? Though you making people cry and stuff, hugging your daughter. What commercial was
that? Oh, my God. You know what? That commercial was written for... I sadly say this. It was written for a white family. And
oh, wow.
I guess they changed it at the last minute. And it was for a black family. And so I really like that. And I'm a cosmic man. Like, I'm a astronomy man. I love string theory and, you know, most of the universe and stuff like that. So it was right at my alley. But I think that the one thing that changed my life was when I did the theater play, right? I changed my life in terms of acting, you know, being a better actor, whatever. But on this platform, when it went out, I was getting calls the same day and messages and kids at school. And yeah, it was impactful. Even today, just going to the grocery store, this lady said, "Aren't you the guy off the grocery?" I'm like, "How do you guys sit here and watch this?" And it's not like it's a bright commercial. Like, how do you recognize it? But yeah, it was a good commercial and I'm blessed with it. And at the end of the day, as an actor, you just forget that one, you move on to the next one. You forget that one, you move on to the next one. I just got booked for another one, so I'm on that one, and then go on to the next one, you go on to the next one. But yeah, you know, I'm all soaked and I'm embarrassed right now. So yeah, that's the only thing I got going is audition.
Yeah, I know when you're in it, it's always, you know, it's on to the next project. I totally get that.
What
but
it is.
Like, but I gotta give you props to that one, man. Like, I saw that, I was like, yo, I was like, good for you, Dennis.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, yeah. I've been getting lots of love for that one there.
No, for sure.
Lots of love, yeah.
For sure. Now, Jess, I know you got a project coming up soon. You got to let the people know about it and how to listen to it, how to get to it. Plug it.
Plug your shit.
Straight up, yeah. So I got like a instrumental album. I got a couple projects that's coming out, but first up is going to be an instrumental album. It's called All Thanks, No Praise. Because I want to thank everyone who's helped me along the way, but I don't want no praise. I'm just going to drop some dope music and you can vibe out to it. So that'll be coming out. It's going to be on all platforms, whether it's Spotify, Tidal, iTunes. I'm going to put it out, and that's going to be next month, November. So I'm going to commemorate my brother Blue on his birthday, 27th of November, and I'm going to drop this album for him. So next month we'll have that instrumental, and then I have a couple other projects that are going to drop in succession quickly after that. But that's going to be the first joint that I drop from the Beats by Bruce's collection.
Okay.
Right. And you're working, man. Holy, like, I wish I had something like that to say.
And you know what? And shout out to Blue and his family. You know, that's
for sure.
That's a good look. That's a good look. What you're doing there? That's definitely good.
Everything, you know. Everything we do represents. So, when I started music, I started with him. So it only makes sense, right?
For sure. For sure. Nah, man, I appreciate, like I said, I appreciate you guys coming on and talking about I like to call it an underrated classic. Well, we can just call it a classic, but however you want to call it. And I thank you guys for coming on and having this conversation, man. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, likewise. I appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, man, no question. Thank you all for tuning in to The Stoop, as always. Special shout out goes out to Dennis Barham and Justice from Beats by Bruises. And I know he hates to give himself praise, but Dennis has been making some moves lately in the last year and change. And you can see him in that Easy Financial commercial for those who haven't seen it yet. That's the one we were talking about a little bit earlier. And also, please make sure that in late November on all of your platforms to go ahead and check out the Beats by Bruises upcoming producer album, All Thanks, No Praise. All right, make sure you go check that out as well. Respect to both of these men for hopping on this pod and continuing to shine your light on them. And I thank you for the support as well, you the listeners. Please remember, as always, that South Sharav is available on every platform that you listen to your favorite podcast. Continue to rate, review, listen, and subscribe to all of the content that comes from South Sharav Radio. and continue to show that five-star loving that I know that you're good for. And to check out the rest of my entire catalog, go ahead and subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Justice and Dennis Barham, this is Kyle C. And you just tuned in to The Stoop on South Shore Ave Radio. On to the next pod, folks. Peace. We out.